said, hey, baby, where are you trying to get to? She said, I'm gonna spread a lot of love around to everybody. And a whole lot of peace of mind to you and you. Said, baby, come along with you, baby. Yes, you can come along.
Wakey, wakey. Eggs and bakey.
It's time for an unbalanced breakfast with Matt and Catherine, a.k.a. Smart.
Hamburger, the cornerstone of any nutritious breakfast.
My boy says he can eat 50 eggs, he can eat 50 eggs.
Do you like apples?
I don't drink juice. See ya!
How about you, Sad Burns? You want some of this milk?
Bliss is highly nutritious microwaveable macaroni and cheese dinner that people sold it on sale. Amen.
They've got the hottest takes on the hottest stories and trends in food, nutrition, and fitness.
Come on! Bread makes you fat.
Bread makes you fat?
I haven't had a carb since 2004.
Calories. That's a gluten. Fat. That's a gluten.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
Filled protein combined with synthetic aminos, vitamins, and minerals. Everything the body needs.
I'm only eating foods with less than 30% calories from fat. It's 40%.
He read the squirrels were high in cholesterol.
We're about to find out what happens when a policy student and a science student interact.
And I also brought you some hydroponically grown goji berries with vegan barbecue sauce and some organic pumpkin chips.
Short answer, being vegan just makes you better than most people.
I happen to be a vegetarian.
You must have had vegetables fresher than that growing up on a farm, Greg.
Never trust a vegetarian.
Looks like meat back on my menu.
The views and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of WMFO, Tufts University, or the Friedman School of Nutrition.
Yes. Who's hungry?
And the people did feast upon the lambs and sloth and carp and anchovies and orangutans and breakfast cereals and fruit bats.
Good morning and welcome to an unbalanced breakfast. Returning to the airwaves here on WMFO Medford 91.5 FM, streaming live on WMFO.org. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Can you feel it? Baseball starts tomorrow. Can you feel it?
I'm so wonderful, excited. Wonderful thing. I love the sports.
I know you do. We may be talking about some sports a little bit later on. But before we get to all that, we have a very special guest in studio with us this morning. Lauren, hello. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming in, trekking in here nice and bright and early on a Saturday morning.
Yeah. Absolutely. So,
very happy to have you
favorite
on.
Favorite time of the week.
Exactly.
Oh, good.
So, just real quick before we jump into our conversation, Lauren is the founder of Branch Food. She was also, in 2015, named one of three female entrepreneurs to look out for by Metro.
Nice.
And in 2014, was named one of Zagat's 30 Under 30. She's worked for the World Trade Organization in Geneva, Switzerland, and of course is a graduate of the Friedman School of Nutrition. So welcome, Lauren.
Thank you.
And the first thing I mentioned, that you are the founder of Branch Food, is what we're going to be focusing on this morning. So just kind of open up to you to talk about what Branch Food is, how it all got started.
Absolutely. So Branch Food is an organization that supports food entrepreneurship in Boston. We have co-working space for food entrepreneurs and startups to work out of, located in downtown Boston. We do a lot of events that highlight food innovation. So everything from interesting technology platforms to new food products to new services. We work to highlight those businesses through our events. And then we do classes and workshops that help educate people on launching businesses in that sector.
Great. And you mentioned that space that you have for people to work out of. How does that work? How do people get, if they're interested, how do they get involved there?
Sure.
How do you advertise that?
Yeah, sure. So the space is located at 50 Milk Street in downtown Boston. We launched it in partnership with the CIC, the Cambridge Innovation Center, at their 50 Milk Street location. It is a monthly membership, so it's shared workspace for people and teams that are looking for access to and physical amenities to run their business. And then also the kind of added benefit of being in a food community, which helps them sort of further their business development goals. The companies that are in our space are focused on technology, like I said before, new services, new apps, new websites, but also new physical food products and CPG companies like, you know, your healthy granola bars and your beverages, and even some people working on really cool kind of unique alternative proteins concepts and like chips with cricket flour in them.
Nice.
So.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. We were talking about that a week or two ago.
We were featuring cricket flour. Not really cricket flour, but the protein content of crickets.
Awesome.
Which I haven't actually had myself, but I'm looking forward to trying out.
Have you tried some?
I have, yeah. So there's a great company called Six Foods that was based in Boston. They recently relocated to the West Coast, but it's a cricket chip company, and it's like tortilla chips, but made from cricket flour.
Oh, wow.
XO is another one based out of New York City. They have, it's more like a bar that you would eat maybe as a meal replacement or something. Really good. They don't taste like crickets. I don't know if I'd really know what crickets taste like. They do a pretty good job of hiding them with you know, salt and sugar and
cocoa. Oh, that's
cocoa.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's you know, it's a really interesting field. It's a growing field. And that's just one part of the nutrition food sector. That
we're going to have to try those. Definitely. Bring them in.
We have to get something like that going on the show. Taste testing. Things.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, not in the studio.
Not in the studio. Evil. We'll give you some dead air while we go outside and try it. Come back in.
So can you talk about some of the apps and some of the companies that are there now and what they're working on and what's come out of there?
Sure. So we have, like I said before, everything from new kind of food products, healthy food products. The health category is really growing in a lot of retail and grocery locations. So we have a company called Energy Bites in our space that's creating kind of bar bites that are made from healthy fats and nuts and other types of ingredients. We have another company called Cabbage, which is an online platform to help farmers optimize their price for crops.
Huh.
It was started by a female entrepreneur here in Boston, and she comes from the tech world and is applying a really amazing algorithm to helping farmers kind of grow the amount of money that they're getting for their crops. We have a new restaurant concept in Boston growing there called Tom's Bow Bow. They're expanding to the city. They're based in Rhode Island, and they're launching, I believe, their first location in Harvard Square. So, you know, the companies and food innovation, as we define it, is pretty broad. But, you know, it's across the food sector that we're seeing a lot of growth in this space, and we're excited to just, you know, be able to provide resources for the people launching those businesses.
Yeah, and do they reach out to you if they're interested? Do you hear about companies that are starting? How do those partnerships form?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. We, like I said before, do a lot of events. And so we're always looking for new, interesting companies that are growing up in this space, doing interesting things, helping sort of the food system kind of grow or change or help fix it. And so so we look out actively finding those companies. And then, you know, we're pretty loud about what we do on social media and in our marketing efforts. And so companies find us as well. We try and do a pretty good job of promoting our space, promoting the events. And so much of our work is networking oriented. Mm-hmm. So we try and provide those opportunities for people to learn more about what others are doing in the sector. And then, you know, hoping that their business development goals are achieved based on those efforts.
It's so great, too, because food is such a big, like, it's a sector, but it's almost more of a category, so you don't have people siloed into, like, just tech, just restaurants, so mm-hmm. people really get to kind of cross categories. That seems like it'd be such a great way to generate new ideas. And
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And I think for us, it's a huge... we've really tried to merge both the technology startup sector here in Boston with the food sector. Certainly not solely responsible for that, but we've tried to force a lot of kind of engagement between those, you know, really awesome technology minds, as well as people that really understand the food system and the challenges that exist within it, to come together and create innovative solutions for solving some of the industry's biggest challenges.
Awesome.
That's cool.
And how did you come up with this whole idea? Was it something that developed when you were at Friedman, or how did...
Yeah, so it started out as a meetup group, actually, okay. on meetup.com.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so at the time I moved back to Boston, after I graduated, moved to Geneva. Hated it. Came back, you know, was helping a couple of different organizations pull together events around the future of food. Didn't really have a place to advertise these events to or groups. I mean, despite the fact that there were tons of people coming to this these events, there was really no one place to go and advertise them to. And so started a meetup group out of one of the events that I was doing, you know, said, if you're interested in continuing the conversation around food innovation, come to Tavern in the Square in Central. That was where we hosted our first meetup. There's about 30 people there. And from there, we just started advertising more events to the group, growing the group. We started doing events of our own. We launched the co-working space. We're providing resources now for entrepreneurs. And so it's a very organic growth. I mean, you know, it obviously didn't happen overnight. I've been working on this since August of 2013.
Oh, wow.
But it's been a sort of a very natural, you know, innovative food community that's come together around Branch Food and the resources that we're providing.
Sure. And do you have sort of a long-term vision for it, or for now just keep on doing what you're doing with the tech and startups?
I think these innovative food communities exists all over the world. We're seeing a lot of interesting concepts attempting to aggregate those communities in New York and San Francisco and, you know, London, really across the world. I think that there's a lot of value in that. There's a lot of knowledge sharing that happens. I think there's a lot of networking and, you know, just helping people grow their businesses. And so, you know, we would love to be part of those efforts in other cities as well.
Awesome. All right. So now let's talk about Ideate. So you mentioned that you have a whole ton of events, and one of them is happening on Monday, just 2 days away. So real quick, some of the details for those interested. So Ideate is happening on Monday. It runs from 10 to 5, and it's going to be at Community Work Services, which is 174 Portland Street in Boston. And tickets are available online at Ideate Boston through Eventbrite. So can you tell us about that? What is the event? What's going to happen there?
Sure. Ideate is an event highlighting restaurant innovation in Boston. So we have pulled together what we've considered the most innovative entrepreneurs and restaurateurs that are pushing the envelope in the industry, doing things differently, addressing real challenges that are inherent to restaurants, either with technology or education or networks, and bringing them together to have a conversation about what they're doing. It's an industry-focused event, but there's people from the community that are coming that'll be in attendance as well. We have everyone from Andy Husbands, from Tremont 647, to Eli Feldman from Clothbound. He used to run operations for the Barbara Lynch Grupo, to the founders of Toast, which is a exploding POS system, point of sale system, okay. for restaurants here in the greater Boston area and nationally. I believe they're expanding. And so we have really interesting people participating on the speaking side. And then in the audience, I mean, we've had everyone from Trade, Mistral, Ruth's Chris, JP Beer Garden in attendance. And so it's going to be a really exciting event. I think the content's going to be out of this world. I think it's a conversation that the restaurant industry is ready to have and has been having in smaller ways, but I'm excited to pull it together and host it on Monday.
Awesome. And you said you think it's time for them to get together, and I was interested because maybe you can call it a tagline, but on the website it says, restaurants are critically important to our economy, culture, and society. The current economic model is broken, but we can fix it. And I was interested if you could kind of expand upon that a little bit, because a lot of people refer to the food system in general and all different aspects of it as broken. So can you kind of talk about how you see that?
Sure. So restaurants operate on a 6% margin. Margin is sales minus cost of goods. Mm-hmm. So 6% margin is not a ton of... does not leave a ton of flexibility for trying new things, doing things differently, trying new technology that might help with sourcing, trying new technology that might help you engage with your regular customers. And so for Ideate, I mean, we're really trying to highlight those challenges, highlight how people are solving them, and, you know, help address a lot of those problems that exist in restaurants, both in the front of the house, the back of the house, and with the sort of support foundation as a whole.
Okay, great. And So how much of it, because you mentioned some really great speakers that are going to be there, mm-hmm. and how much opportunity will there be for networking and kind of open discussion as well?
Yep. So the day is pretty packed. We have a lot of different panels and speakers that will be speaking about everything from reinventing hospitality to technology in back of the house to PR for restaurants. And so there's a lot of panels, but there will be a networking lunch, there will be an after party, there will be time during the day for people to network, meet others that are there, talk about what they're doing, look for partners, look for others in the space that are creating innovative tools for the restaurant sector.
And do you have a startup showcase that'll be there? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the Startup Showcase is happening over after lunch. It is six startups that are presenting the different tools that they've created for to solve different challenges in restaurants. It's kind of rapid fire. So 5-minute pitch, they get 3 minutes for a question and answer from the crowd. It's not a sales pitch as much as it is identifying the problem that they're solving and then talking about the solution that they've created for it. The question and answer is also going to be pretty interesting, because they're sharing this information with a very relevant crowd. I mean, these are their customers. Mm-hmm. It's not only going to be customers asking critical questions of those solutions, but it's also going to be the entrepreneur asking, how can we make the solution better? Mm. And so it's more of a collaborative opportunity for these startups than a sales pitch or a true kind of showcase of what they're doing.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And so I guess if I was listening and considering attending this, why should I attend? Kind of what would be your big push for me to go?
Who would be, is it like everyone who loves food and restaurants should come in? Is it you're looking to break into the food kind of sphere, sector, who are you looking for?
Yeah,
why should Matt go?
Matt should come because he's supporting Branch Food. I think people that are obviously in the industry and are not only interested in problems, but interested in trying to solve them, contributing to efforts that are going on currently in the Boston area that are attempts at helping restaurants understand, how to better inform their purchasing for the back of the house or how to better inform their social media efforts for promoting their concepts. I think the event can speak to many different people that are interested in innovating for the space, that are interested in getting involved in restaurants, that are interested in changing what some of those problems are. And then, of course, there's always the community that shows up, people that are just interested in food, are curious about the sector, may have ideas of their own that they're looking to flesh out a little bit more, and just interested folks that are excited about restaurants. I think there's, that sector in Boston is totally growing. I feel like there's a new restaurant opening every week. Mm-hmm. There's a fantastic article written by Sam Hirschsteiner a couple of months ago, published in First We Feast, about Boston being the next great American food town. He's going to be one of our opening speakers for the day.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm excited to hear what he has to say. I think it is time for us to be having this conversation in Boston. And hopefully Ideate will be the platform to not only have this conversation, but hopefully many more will spin out of it as well.
Yeah, sounds awesome. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, people out there who have not signed up yet, you can go ahead and do that at ideateboston.com. Again, that takes place Monday from 10 to 5. That's at Community Work Services in Boston. Is there anything else you wanted to mention about Ideate? There's some other stuff we wanted to ask about before we hit a song break, but anything about Ideate first?
Free food.
Free food, that's what that's
And he's
one.
Not really free because you have to pay a ticket for the ticket, but Sweetgreen's been an awesome sponsor for us.
Oh my goodness.
Yep, Source What's Good out of Rhode Island has been an awesome sponsor for us. Toast has been an awesome sponsor for us. So, we're just really excited about the event. I think it's going to be a conversation unlike any other that's happened for this industry here in Boston before, and we have the right people there talking about it. So, come.
Excellent.
Yeah, sounds great.
And speaking of free stuff, I wanted to ask about another event that's very, also very, that I'm interested in personally. So you have the a job fair coming up, the Will Work for Food Job and Internship Fair. Mm-hmm. That takes place on April 14th from 3 to 7 at CIC Boston, which is at 50 Mill Street, which you mentioned. And can you talk a little bit about that and then what people could expect
Sure. Sure. So Will Work for Food is an event that was actually kind of pulled together by one of the women that I work with. Her name is Sarah Moser. She's been working with Branch Food for a little while. And it is basically we've got a number of different food companies coming to share open positions in their locations. We have one that's super exciting that I can't officially announce because I haven't signed on officially, but you want to be there. You want to be at this event. There's really great, I mean, very innovative food companies coming out, really exciting positions that they're offering. We've had a tremendous response to this event. We've had over 200 people RSVP. Wow. It's always hard to estimate how many people are actually going to show up with a free event, but you know, we've not only have we been getting the RSVPs, we've been getting a lot of people writing in saying how interested they are in coming. So it's going to be a great event. It's at our co-working space at 50 Milk Street. And, you know, it's over the course of a couple of hours, so people can come and go as they please. But real exciting opportunities out there for people to work in food and get involved in businesses that are doing really amazing things.
And you pointed out you have a number of different positions or a number of different companies coming. Are they representing just the Boston area, or are you talking kind of national opportunities?
Most of them are Boston opportunities. Okay. Some of them are national. Some of them are remote.
Oh, great.
And what type of, for perspective, for job seekers, is it going to be mostly tech companies, or is it going to be from all over?
It's really all over. We have kind of a nice balance of food product companies, food tech companies, and even some retail concepts. So,
Excellent. Well, I am definitely planning on checking that out.
Yeah, definitely. All the Friedmanites.
Exactly. Yeah, get out there. It's about that time.
Yeah. And,
so you can check out all this information again on branchfood.com. Have everything you would like to know about the company, the services they offer, and different events happening. And we're going to, at this point, take a quick song break. And Lauren, you're more than welcome to hang around.
You can talk. We have some more. If you have a question, maybe you should call in Lauren.
I was going to say, if you want to call in, talk to Lauren. Mm-hmm. The number here is 617-627-3800. You can also talk to us if you'd like. You can also hit us up on Twitter at NutritionWonk or Boxman37. I like how yours is very nutrition-based and mine is very not. All right, so yeah, we're going to take a quick break. Catherine, why don't you tell us what we're about to hear?
Oh, this is the Punch Brothers, My Oh My, and they are coming to Boston soon, playing a concert. I do think it's sold out, though, so that's kind of unfair that I'm throwing this out there. But they're wonderful. You should check them out. All right,
and here is My Oh My from the Punch Brothers. You're listening to An Unbalanced Breakfast on WMFO 91.5 FM, streaming live on WMFO.org. Welcome back to An Unbalanced Breakfast on WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM, streaming live on WMFO.org. You just heard Catherine's selection for the week. That was the Punch Brothers with My Oh My. And so we are still here with Lauren from Branch Food. Been talking to her this morning about Branch Food and Ideate and the Will Work for Food Job and Internship Fair, some events that Branch Food has going on. Also wanted to talk about a couple of things still with Branch Food. If you could talk about, one is the Boston Food Network database that you've put together. Can you talk about what that is?
Absolutely. So the Boston Food Network database is our attempt at cataloging the existing organizations that make up the Boston food ecosystem. It is not a comprehensive list, but no such list ever existed. And so, you know, we get people writing in, emailing in, asking us, you know, what organizations are out there that are working on, you know, innovative food solutions, or what organizations are out there that are doing really great, you know, nonprofit work. And so this website is a resource for that person that's looking to learn more about what's going on in the Boston food system, maybe looking for job opportunities, looking for other ways to get involved in what's going on. And so, you know, it's a list. There's websites on it. There's some contact information, but not a ton. We're actually revamping it this summer, so it's a little bit more interactive, and people can use it in a number of different ways, more so than they can use it now. But go on, check it out. It's a great resource for people that are looking to understand our community a little bit better.
And is the easiest way to access that through the Branch Food website?
Yep. So if you go on www.branchfood.com, if you navigate up into the right corner, you'll see Boston Food Network listed up there, along with a number of other different resources we have. But click on that, takes you to the website, and go to the Explore tab, and you'll see all of the different, it's kind of laid out by sectors, everything from funding resources to producers to distributors. So it's a good overall view, but like I said, it's not specifically comprehensive.
Cool. And now back to some of the events. So a couple other things they have going on. You have the Food and Tech Mystery Speaker Series.
Oh, yeah. These are exciting.
Yeah. So yeah, can you talk about that and who's shown up for those so far?
Sure. The Mystery Speaker Series is something that's been really fun. Over the past month, we actually started it last year. We had four different founders come and speak about launching food product businesses. And then we repeated it this year with four food tech founders coming to talk about launching their businesses. And so we've had really engaging speakers working on everything from aggregating local farm produce to distribute to restaurants and retail locations, to workforce apps for restaurants, to the farming platform that I was talking about before, Cabbage. So, you know, we've had a number of different people working on specifically technology platforms for the food space, and just kind of sharing what their journey has been like, growing them, launching them here in Boston, what it's been like growing that type of a business here in Boston. We're not necessarily known for a very liberal investment culture. and it's oftentimes that, you know, tech companies need that type of investment to really grow and scale. And so so it's been sort of interesting hearing the opportunities and challenges that those entrepreneurs have faced growing their startups, and they're all doing a fantastic job. And so you can check them out on our meetup group and on our website. They've been listed on there. I highly recommend their work.
And when do those tend to be? Are those weeknights or the weekend events?
So it's unfortunately it's over now. We hosted our last one this past week, but they were weeknights starting at 6:30 at our space.
And when do you announce the name of the speaker? So I know it's like, come and see, because I've seen it before and I'm like, oh, I want to see who the mystery speaker is. At what point before it starts?
It's normally week of. We'll announce it at the beginning of the week. For ticket sales, people typically don't buy tickets until, you know, a week out or so.
Right.
And so, you know, we entice them with sort of the mystery.
Right,
And then we release the name a couple of days before.
That's a fun idea.
Yeah.
I like mysteries.
And one last of the community table events that you have. And if you saw the latest issue of Tufts Nutrition Magazine, which we have totally hammered with for content for this show, but Lauren had a feature on her, and it opened up talking about the community table events. So can you say a little bit about those?
Yeah. So community table is an event model that was actually started by Babson Food Soul. Rachel Greenberger is a tremendous powerhouse in the food space, a real entrepreneur herself. and launched Food Soul within Babson, I believe a couple of years ago. They got a grant to start community tables, not only at Babson, but also in other communities around, I guess, New England. And so community table is essentially an unstructured conversation around food. So people come over the course of the lunch hour. They can bring their lunch. They can bring samples of their product. They could bring, an app and do a demo. And we go around and we sort of do kind of lengthy introductions about what we're interested in, what we're doing in food. And then the conversation is really led by the collective. So people can, you know, say, "Hey, I'm a new startup. I'm looking for resources to, fund my business, or I'm really trying to figure out my new brand and logo. What do you guys think of this? What do you guys think of that?" And so it's a very interesting, conversation. It's always new every month. We host it normally on the first Thursday of every month. We always list it on our meetup group, meetup.com/branchfood. And anyone can come. It's a free event. We get a great turnout. It's normally a packed room. But it's in many ways the sort of lowest barrier to entry into what we're doing at Branch Food and gets people out talking about what they're doing.
Awesome. Well, this is all very exciting, all the stuff going on, all the events that you guys are doing and the different services. And so one last question is, you went to Friedman, you're involved in the food conversation now, starting your own company. What advice can you offer to recent both Friedman or potential Friedman grads and undergrads here at Tufts and elsewhere if this is what they want to do?
Oh, gosh. So at Friedman, in school, in food-focused programs, you learn about problems that exist. Mm-hmm. And you understand them from really a very connected way. And I think that connectivity of the food system, that deep understanding of the food system, is something that lacks in a lot of people that are innovating for the food system in various ways. And so what we've done at Branch Food is try to connect those innovators to people that understand the sectors. And so what I would say to people that are interested in launching these businesses that are coming from Friedman or coming from, other parts of the food system that where they really understand the challenges and problems, you are the content owners. You can build innovative solutions. You might not know how to build an app. You might not know how to launch a website, but you have a real, knowledge core that that will help you grow a successful business because you understand the challenges, you understand the players that need to be on board for this business or this concept to really take off. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it, you could find people to help. It's really important to get people excited about what you're working on, excited about what you're doing. That's where you find your best team members, the ones that you can get excited about those topics. And so I'd encourage everyone to think about problems that they're passionate about, problems that they want to solve, and try and figure out ways to do that.
Yeah. And what's the best way to reach you if someone wanted to ask you a question or wanted to learn more about what's going on at Branch Food? What would be the best way to reach you?
Sure. I'm lauren@branchfood.com.
Okay.
I'm always on my email. And so, happy to answer questions, happy to take meetings. It's what we do, not only myself, but it's what Branch Food does. So we want to be that helpful resource.
That's great.
Yeah. This has all been
thank
awesome.
You so much for coming in.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me and best of luck with the show. It's awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And just a reminder for people, so Ideate happens on Monday. You can get tickets now at ideateboston.com. And then Thursday, April 14th will be the free job fair, job and internship fair. So definitely check all that out. So we have a few minutes. We actually have a second guest who's going to be on for the last segment of the show.
Yeah.
So we have some general things to talk about.
Right.
Did you want to talk? Did you have specific stuff?
I actually just finished. I was actually at a really, speaking of community events, I was at a great community event this week. It was hosted by Boston Children's Hospital Optimal Weight for Life Clinic, which is sponsored by New Balance. And it was called Childhood Obesity in the Community, Turning Science into Care. And so this was a really great two-day conference. It took place at the Charles Hotel, and it was sponsored by New Balance and hosted by the OWL Clinic, like I said, which is run by Dr. David Ludwig, who you might know. He just came out with a New York Times best-selling diet book, Always Hungry, and he's kind of one of the pioneers of the idea of
utilizing a low GI diet to increase satiety and decrease intake and decrease adiposity, lose weight. And so I was able to attend the event, which was really great, and it featured a few really key speakers. So basically the way that this worked is, of course, the first day had a lot of the science. So we had a bunch of people who were scientists or clinicians coming in and talking about their scientific experience with overweight, obesity, weight loss. And then the next day, you know, at the end of the first day and into the next day, it was a little bit more about the community. How do you structure an environment to help people maintain a healthy weight? How do you structure school lunches? How do you sponsor the right bills? So that people can live in healthy environments, they have the resources they need, and I'm sure that and a lot of it was, you know, how do you create? And I'm like looking at Lauren. You can't see me. I'm looking at Lauren, and a lot of it is how do you create businesses? How do you create community centers and nonprofits that address those issues as well? So you're encouraging the community to kind of get involved. So I just wanted to kind of do a quick rundown. It's a biannual conference, so it's going to happen again in 2 years. I definitely encourage anybody interested to come. But basically, it started, and we talked a little bit about the state of the science in obesity. So we had some really exciting guests. Dr. Kevin Hall was there from the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, and he kind of talked about let me see if I can think about the best scientific way to summarize this up. He kind of talked about the set point theory. So a lot of scientists focus on the idea that when you lose weight, your body actually really wants to maintain your highest weight. So your body will create a bunch of sort of chemical feedback mechanisms that will cause you to increase your appetite and consume more calories so that you can maintain a stable weight. And what his research is focused on is How do you look at small changes over time, and how do you see what your body is doing to compensate for those changes? And then also there was a doctor, really interesting doctor, talking about genetics. Doctor, I'm so sorry about mispronouncing last name, but like Dr. Mazoub, I think. And he talked about whether genes cause obesity. So he was talking about different like methylations of specific genes you can have, and whether or not that can be blamed for your obesity. I'm quote unquote blaming your genes for your obesity. And so while your genes do play a role in your obesity, we learned, you know, all of the alleles or all of the genes, right, that can change, that affect your weight, all of those genes in the human genome, as far as we know, account for only about 3% in the variability of body weight. So while they definitely matter, they really don't account for everything. And so while that could be kind of frustrating, it's actually probably a really good thing, because that means that there are things within your control or within your community's control. And then just to kind of summarize, there were a bunch of breakout groups where different people who worked within the community came in and talked about what they were doing. So where I was, Massachusetts Public Health came in and spoke about all the initiatives that they were sponsoring to create a healthier environment for kids and to advocate for people from underserved communities so that they had access to healthy food. So it was a really great event. If you want to check out the hashtag on Twitter and see kind of what people were saying about it, it was hashtag obesity community conference, and all of those tweets should still be up. So feel free to take a look at all the different slides that came up and all the different speakers. And obviously, if you Google the event, at the Obesity Prevention Center, Boston Children's Hospital, you'll be able to find out all about it.
Awesome. Yeah. It seemed interesting. I was following along a little bit with the tweet, seeing you live tweet the event. So
yeah, I was live tweeting the event, so I seemed very strange, I think, to a lot of the doctors who were there like, what is this girl doing? But yeah. All
right. And in case we don't have a chance to mention this at the end of the show, but the Freedman Sprout is out. So check that out now, freedmansprout.com.
Yeah.
The April issue is out. And so now we are going to take our second song break. This is going to be my song, because during spring break, they announced the Warped Tour lineup, and this is probably the oldest band on the tour. And if I go this year, I'll probably be the only person excited to see them. But this is Les and Jake with All My Best Friends Are Metalheads off of Hello Rockview. And when we come back, we should have Alan Levinitz on the phone.
Of how you looked and how you act and how you
Hello.
Hello, and welcome back to WMFO in Medford, 91.5 FM, streaming live on WMFO.org. You just heard All My Best Friends Are Metalheads from the band Less Than Jake. Catch them on tour this summer.
Oh my gosh, I remember them.
See, it was funny. They had like this
live. I realize
live,
they're still a band, but.
They had this live announcement concert show for the Warped Tour.
I think I saw them open for Good Charlotte in 2004.
I wouldn't be surprised. But like, there's all these like teen pop punk fans down in Florida watching the show, and like they had all like the like Real Friends and some other like current bands. Mm-hmm. And then Less Than Jake came out to close it off, and even the band was saying in between songs, like, thanks for being into this, guys, because everyone was just sitting still, standing still, not knowing any of the words. Yeah. I was singing along in my basement, but that's fine.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
All right, so we are here. Lauren from Branch Food is still with us in studio, and now we have our next guest on the phone now, Alan.
Dr. Alan Levinovitz.
So why don't you take
Am I saying that right, Alan?
You are saying it correctly.
Okay, and I can hear you now.
Yes,
so.
You are coming through loud and clear on the air.
Yes, that's good, because I'm realizing, we've never spoken in person before, so I've just only said your name in my head. So Dr. Alan Levinovitz is a professor of religion at James Madison, is that correct?
That's right, James Madison University.
Yes, and so what's really interesting, obviously, is that you, while your background is in religion and philosophy, your book that came out last year is about food. So I was wondering, can you tell us a little bit about your background? How did you get into religion? What kind of has your career path been like? And what made you kind of look into the nutrition world?
Sure. So I've always been interested in bioethics. As an undergrad, I was really interested in bioethics. But as I started studying more, taking different philosophy classes, I realized that what I was really interested in were the reasons that people end up believing in things. So how do we convince other people to believe certain things, and how do we end up being convinced? And that led me beyond philosophy to religion, where you get all sorts of different ways of convincing people. You get stories, you get revelations, you get commandments, you also get logic and history and argument. And I became really interested in how all of those ways of convincing people of things interact. And I ended up going to graduate school and getting a PhD in something called religion and literature. And I studied classical Chinese philosophy. And what really attracted me to classical Chinese philosophy was this was an area where you could see all these different forms of communication, parables, logic, evidence, interacting to make arguments. And so that's my background. That's the kind of academic stuff I'm interested in. And of course, I think for people like yourself or your listeners who have spent any time paying attention to the food world, you start to notice those same kinds of those same forms of communication around arguments about food. So you hear stories, you hear commandments, you hear rules, you hear the same kinds of adjectives about purity and impurity, being clean and being unclean.
It's like natural
foods in religion.
Yeah. And so you're saying like natural foods. I was thinking you were like, you start to hear stories. I was like, you start to see PowerPoints. But yeah, a lot of kind of the arguments that come up around food and nutrition are sort of structured around building a case. So I have these examples, I have these anecdotes, or I have these core tenets and beliefs. And now I'm going to tell you, well, here's the protocol you need to follow to meet those tenets.
Absolutely.
But those, I guess, and you know from your research, are not always actually based in evidence. They're based a lot of times in something that's a little bit more like beliefs.
Yeah, totally. And one of the things I was really surprised to, you know, whenever I would dig into the biography of people who are really successful nutrition gurus, so even someone, you know, really outstanding science writer like Gary Taubes, turning to you know, low-fat or low-carb, high-fat diets, you know, I thought that was strange coming from a guy who had been so skeptical previously in his writing about the dangers of salt, for example. And what I found in Taubes' case is that he'd had this sort of Saul-Paul conversion moment where he lost a lot of weight on a high-fat, low-carb diet. And again, I saw that there were stories, people who advocated these things, even, you know, scientists and journalists and doctors, would have these kinds of conversion narratives, and conversion narratives are really central to the rhetoric around diet and the kinds of things you see on TV, right? Before and after pictures are really a lot like religious conversion experiences. Before I was sinful and bad and ugly and sad, and then I followed this new set of commandments, and now I'm a new person. I think better, I look better, I am better.
And what seems to be so pervasive, you know, you're talking about Gary Taubes or people who are, I mean, incredibly intelligent, have a lot of knowledge, have a lot of ability, is that you don't think that that's what you're doing. You think that you, because you're so capable, that you're looking at it as you know, objectively as you possibly can, but really you're not. And so that's like what's kind of becomes really interesting about it, is that people, you can't see your own biases in that, in those scenarios. And I know that I reached out to you recently because I wrote a review of the recent New York Times, instant New York Times best-selling diet book, The Stash Plan, which is based on the Chinese Meridian Theory. Obviously, I reached out to you because I had never heard of the Chinese Meridian Theory. But, you know, they posit all of these. So it's written by Laura Prepon of Orange is the New Black. And then her integrative nutritionist, Elizabeth Troy. And they write this whole book sort of creating all of these physiological predictions based on, you know, what's going to happen to you based on your meridians. Now, obviously, that is a belief. But what's really interesting is they tie science to it, right? So they say, this is some specific physiological response you're going to have. You're going to get cellulite. And it's because of something that's blocking your meridian, right? So can you explain, like, why does that happen? Why does someone say this actual outcome is going to happen because of this sort of tenuous belief? If that makes sense.
Well, you know, the Chinese medicine thing is really interesting, because Chinese medicine, and this is something I'm studying right now as an academic as well, is and medicine in general, right, is on the border between science and art. You know, people talk about the art of medicine. And Chinese medicine, of course, is a long tradition. It's extremely complicated. Lots of people practice it in different ways. It has fundamentally different metaphysical assumptions than, say, you know, traditional Western secular science, right? So the number five is extremely important. There are five phases that correspond to elements like wood and fire and water. There's qi, which is variously translated as energy or power or breath, that sustains you and runs through these channels called meridians, which themselves are very difficult to map because they don't correspond to any kind of empirical, observable phenomenon. And so I think people are attracted to the exoticism of it. They're also attracted to the fact that Chinese medicine often treats people as individuals, so there's much more case history taking, there's much more attention to individuals, and I find that that's a really important thing that's often missing from medicine for various reasons, from you know, so-called traditional Western medicine. And so people then struggle. What they want to do is they want to legitimize this theory that's so attractive to them, or that they've had personal success with, that makes them feel good. They want to legitimize it with science. And so you end up with these bizarre translations of Chinese terms which really don't have any, you know, so-called secular scientific equivalents. You end up with people trying to translate them into things like metabolism or blood pressure or cellulite, even though those weren't words that, you know, the Yellow Emperor in the Huangdi Neijing was using 2,000 years ago.
Weren't worried about cellulite, you don't think?
Well, they might have been, been worried about cellulite.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they do about the mechanism.
Right. Well, they don't, yeah, in this book, they don't know about the mechanism either. But it doesn't seem to matter, right? That's not, the point is that it's you're kind of creating this. And I like this idea that it's, what's so appealing about it is that it's very personal. And I think people feel like when they're getting that standard, well, if you want to lose weight, reduce this many calories, exercise this much, you know, that's so impersonal. And the idea that you should be able to tailor it to yourself. So I think, you know, if you're listening and you're, you know, a registered dietitian, or you're somebody who works within a clinical realm, within an evidence-based scope of practice, considering, you know, how can you incorporate the individual nature of this and the kind of caring nature of this without also incorporating sort of the maybe pseudoscientific, and I don't want to get like angry pseudoscientific, but kind of the non-evidence basic parts of this. So right. I wanted to talk a little bit about your book, which is called The Gluten Lie. So can you tell us What was your, there's a review of the Gluten Lie on the Friedman Sprout. So go ahead and go to the Friedman Sprout, look up Gluten Lie, get a more in-depth idea.
Check it out, theglutenlie.com.
And at theglutenlie.com. And tell us a little bit, what was the inspiration for this book and what's the lie about gluten?
Yes, well, so let me start with, if I can answer those in reverse.
Sure.
So the lie about gluten is that we know what's going on with gluten. And that lie comes from all sorts of sources. You'll see headlines that say, you know, gluten sensitivity is BS, or you will see headlines that say gluten, you know, everyone is sensitive to gluten and all people should avoid it. There's all sorts of theories about how gluten does or doesn't affect people's health. The truth is that we don't really know what's going on with gluten, and except with the exception of celiac disease, where we have incontrovertible scientific evidence that gluten needs to be avoided by people who have celiac disease, that it causes potentially fatal complications and certainly all sorts of terrible health effects. But other than that, we don't really know. We don't know whether non-celiac gluten sensitivity really exists. There's some compelling evidence that it does. If it does exist, we don't know what percentage of the population has it. There's a lot of other competing theories, like FODMAPs, which are a certain kind of short chain carbohydrate
right.
that might be getting confused with gluten, so on and so forth. So basically, the lie here, and this isn't just with gluten, but it's with a lot of nutrition science in general, is the fake certainty
right.
that people seem to have, the desire to come down hard on knowing the truth about a very complicated phenomenon which we're really only beginning to scratch the surface of. And those words aren't mine, that beginning to scratch the surface. That comes from Peter Gibson, who's one of the leading researchers on non-celiac gluten sensitivity at mm-hmm. Monash University. And mm-hmm. so this is what all the scientists I interviewed again and again and again, the ones who are actually doing the research, they would say, hey, you know, we don't know yet. We need to be humble. We need to be cautious. And so the lie is coming from anyone who exceeds that humility and caution when it comes to pronouncing on the dangers or lack thereof of eating gluten.
And what's so pervasive about this is that, of course, a lot of people have built their careers on the idea that gluten is so harmful and that we just aren't there yet. I mean, it's very likely not entirely true. And even if parts of it are true, right, the idea that people are now coming out and saying with absolute sort of fanatical certainty that it's bad is what the lie is. But what's kind of interesting is that it seemed like when your book came out, you had a very strong Amazon book review backlash over the title. And I didn't know if you wanted to explain, because when you say the gluten lie, you're saying it's because we don't know what it is. But I think people read it and they thought, he's saying gluten doesn't exist.
Yeah. Even people that read the book, and this is something, you know, if I could go back and do it again, I would change a lot of things. But even, you know, the people see, especially when it comes to religion, and, you know, let me tell you, talking about food, in the last year I've done a lot of talks. I've gone to, you know, went to the gluten-free conference in Asheville, North Carolina. And I really, you know, sometimes I joke with people and say, I just want to get back to religion, which is less sensitive than food. But it's true. And one of the things I realized is that people see what they want to see, and they read what they want to read. And I saw a lot of people reading the book, and what they wanted to see was someone who was dismissing their health concerns, probably because they'd experienced that with either an insensitive doctor or friends who poo-pooed their chronic migraines or whatever it was. And so the title, I think, gave people license to read this as yet another instance of someone blowing them off. And I wish I could go back and do it again.
Right, because that's not what the book is at all.
No, it's not what the book is. The book is historical, right? I mean, you've read it, and your review was really great. I really appreciated it. It just traces the history of how we've been overly certain about the dangers of different foods, whether fat, salt, sugar, or gluten. And what I'm trying to do is caution people to be a little less certain. But here's the thing, and this is the crucial thing. If you believe that you have been saved by a certain kind of belief, if you believe that not eating sugar saved you and saved your life and turned you around and converted you into a new, better person, you don't want to hear about the historical uncertainty of it. And also, you know, I mean, I just got involved in an email back and forth with Robert Lustig, which is it's a long story.
Oh, yeah.
Robert Lustig is an anti-sugar
fructose
advocate out of UCSF, mm-hmm. and he wrote the book Fat Chance. But, you know, what I get from Robert Lustig and some other scientists are, hey, look, maybe sugar is like crack cocaine. Maybe it isn't. But we know people are eating too much of it, so let's amp up the hyperbole so that we can fight against big soda or something like that. And for me, you know, yeah, people need to drink less soda and people need to consume less sugar, but we need to think very hard about the kinds of rhetorical strategies we use in getting people to change their dietary habits. Because if you go beyond the science, you lose the central virtue of science that makes people trust it.
Right. So definitely check out Alan's book. It's excellent. The Gluten Lie, theglutenlie.com. It's available on Amazon. I highly recommend it. Alan, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure finally talking to you in person.
Yeah, and he has a great lecture on YouTube as well. So if you wanted to find that.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah,
thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you, Lauren, for joining us in studio again as well. Again, check out branchfood.com and all the great things they have going on. We are out of time. Stay tuned. No Mike on the mic this morning, but